Minds. And here is your host, Gary Cacciulio.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Everything Imaginable. I am your host, Gary Cacciulio. And before we get started, I want to thank everybody for listening and also thank the contributors to the show, who are Candice Sanderson, author of The Reluctant Messenger, Ms. Aida, author, psychic, spellcaster, root worker, and witch. And you can find her at MsAida.com, MissAida.com. Also, this episode is being sponsored by Ginger Glasser. And you can find Ginger at TarotByGinger.com. And she's a tarot reader and evidential medium. And that's Tarot@Ginger.com. And also Alan Questel. And he has a new book out on Amazon called Intentional Acts of Kindness. And I highly recommend it. And you can also reach him at UncommonSensing.com. And now, without further ado, our guest for today is Rob Guthrow. How are you?
Thanks for coming on. thanks for having me. Nice to be here.
Yeah. And so you're a paranormal investigator?
I am. Paranormal investigator and a medium. And I've written a lot of books about all my experiences.
What got you into, if you're a medium, like, is that with how it first started, like with the mediumship, or did it start with the paranormal research first?
It started really with the mediumship because when I was a teenager, I was 13 years old, my grandfather, who had died 7 months prior, appeared to me in full color and scared the life out of me. So I realized something was going on, and I learned after talking to my parents and told them about it that my mother had the ability and my grandfather, who appeared to be, had the ability. So it ran in my family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely runs in families sometimes. but they were supportive of it, right? So because everybody had it, everybody was supportive of having that experience. So you never had to go through that episode where you had to kind of like block off your abilities and try to fit in.
Not with my parents, but I didn't pay attention to my abilities for a long, long time. Probably until decades later when I had a puppy named Buzz, and his leash opened and he was tragically killed by a car, and he reawakened all my abilities again. And he taught me how pets communicate from the afterlife.
Oh, man. That is a jarring experience.
Yeah, it was, of course, extremely traumatic. But I'm someone who always likes to keep journals. So mm-hmm. I journaled everything that he gave me. And I used that as the basis of my first book to help comfort people who lost their pets and teach them that their pets still come around.
Hmm. So how do pets communicate to a human? Like, do they communicate different than people? Like, do they use words? Do they use symbols? Do you just like, you just see like a bone flying around?
They communicate much the same way that they do in the physical. So when they're here, and what that means is, I've learned that they will do things like, you may hear their nails on the floor in the kitchen because they like to go in the kitchen for dinner. You may hear them scratching on the door if they like to do that, if that was a habit of theirs. For cats like to jump on someone's bed, walk along the bed. You may feel a coolness or a pressure if they used to like to sit on your feet or lean against you. A jingle of a collar. There's so many other ways that pets will communicate to us from the other side.
Hmm. But do they have actual messages for us? Or is it just letting us know that they're still there?
It's kind of both. They typically, when they first pass, pets like to try and come back after they've crossed over. And they 99.5% cross over because they can sense the other side is nothing but goodness and love and peace. Mm-hmm. And our relatives are waiting for them on the other side too. And then they want to come back pretty quickly so that they can comfort us and let us know that they're okay. And typically dreams are the very first sign that they will give us to let us know they're okay.
Wow. So they also think that their spirits will help guide human spirits? Like, say, like, my dog passes away, like, after in the afterlife, will he sort of stay with me?
He will come back from time to time and help guide you to keep you from harm, especially if he was more of a protector. Every dog has their different roles, mm-hmm. and some are protectors and some are more laid back. Some are more stubborn. And I've had all of the above, so they all behave differently.
Yeah. How about humans? What are better spirits? Human spirits, dog spirits?
Oh gosh, dogs by a long shot. Yeah. So I do readings on weekends, and I do readings only for pets, and I decided not to do readings for humans because people have too many hangups. You know, people have too many crazy things going on, and people hold grudges and people hold on to hatred and they don't forgive people, and there's just too much going on. And with dogs and cats, it's all about love, and that's why I do readings with dogs and cats.
Huh. Is it because humans have a dualistic perspective and animals do not?
It could be. Absolutely. Yeah.
But you don't seem as bothered by all the same crap that we are.
No. Gosh, no. not at all. You know, their environment is whatever we show them. And they're not subject to some of the outside stresses that we put upon ourselves. And really, they're here to help us. They're here to help guide us along our journey. They really teach us what unconditional love is. And it takes a lot of strength and a lot of the ability to want to learn what that means. Because as humans, we're not capable of unconditional love.
Right.
we have to be taught that by a pet. And for people who help their pets pass over, know that they understand and they appreciate the strength that and courage that it takes to help them cross over out of pain. And we should never feel guilty about it. Although I've done that a couple of times and I've always felt guilty, but it's a natural thing. But they give us signs when it's time, and they're very appreciative on the other side when I do readings.
I just did one. My girlfriend had to put her dog to sleep a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like, oof. I mean, I can't say it's like was good or bad, but I will say that there was a lot of emotion and energy surrounding it. Like it was intense. It was more, and I've been around people. I've been around several people too, and animals, mm-hmm. but this time it was just very, very intense.
So in my day job, I'm a scientist. I'm a mm-hmm. meteorologist, and I use I use the science of energy to explain how the paranormal works. But I also read studies, like psychological studies, particularly about how pet loss affects people and grief, and it really does leave a deeper impact in terms of grief on people because. Mm-hmm. We raise these pets like we would raise human children. And when they pass, it's really like losing a child. I mean, to me, I've lost four, and they're all my kids. And I always tell people that we raise our pets the same way we would raise a human child. Do you have any human children?
I do not, but I have a dog.
Okay.
In fact, I just had to take him to the vet this morning.
All right. Well, Gary, so when you think about it, we raise them to be sociable with mm-hmm. other dogs or cats. We teach them how to go to the bathroom outside. We teach them when dinner time is. We take them places. We We give them gifts. We give them hugs and emotion. We take them to school, take them to the vet. We do everything we do for a human child. And that's why it's so devastating when they pass. We also tend to forget that they only live between 10 and 15 years old. And as humans, children are never supposed to outlive their parents.
Yeah.
So that's why it's harder. And the, I always joke when I do lectures and I say that that pets will not do what human children do, and that is grow up and marry someone you hate and then move away. You know?
No, they passed away instead.
Yeah.
They should have made them live longer. Yeah. I think God should change one thing.
Yeah. Then I think that we would worry more about what happens to them if we pass. Uh-huh. So, you know, I've written a will, and I urge other people to do that too. And that there's stipulations in that will that whatever I leave behind monetarily goes to the dogs first for their care and comfort and feeding and medical care. Mm-hmm. And then after they pass, naturally, if there's anything left for anybody, then they can have it. But the dogs come first.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Always cover your pets in your will.
Do you think they have a soul purpose? Like, do you think like their souls are aligned with the human soul that they end up with?
So they're – well, every living thing has a soul. And we do have soul mates. I think that when we find a pet, it really is a soulmate to us. It's just animal to person, instead of person to person. So so every living thing has a soul. And what I've come to learn a soul is it's when we die, the energy within us couples with our memories, mm-hmm. our personality, and the knowledge of this life that we lived. And that's what a soul is. And every living thing has it, whether they're dinosaurs or birds or snakes or dogs or cats, doesn't matter. We all have that energy within us. And we make a choice. And I've learned that the choice that we make is either we cross over into the light and become what I call a spirit, or we stay earthbound at a place that we're familiar with, or we choose to stay, or where we died. And that's what I call a ghost. So I made the distinction early on, actually in my first book, that there's a difference between a ghost and a spirit. A ghost is earthbound and can only communicate at that place. Mm-hmm. But a spirit who's crossed over can communicate with you anywhere in the world at any point in time.
Hmm. One of the things I saw in your bio is that you had investigated the birdcage.
I did. Yes.
and like, yeah, I'm sure most of my listeners know what the birdcage is. It's in Tombstone. It's like, it's supposed to be one of the most haunted locations in the country.
I can vouch for that. So I went to the Birdcage Theater. The first time I went to the Birdcage Theater was in 1994. Did you see the movie Tombstone, by the way?
I might have. If I did, I've probably already forgot it.
Okay. It's about Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday and the OK Corral shootout. And
yeah, I remember it when I was like a little kid.
It has, I guess I'm much older than you are. So it's back in 1993. It has Kurt Russell and Val Kilmer.
Yeah, yeah. I remember one like was probably made like 1940.
Oh, no, no. This was 1993. Yeah, so it was about 31 years ago. Anyway, when I first saw that film in 1993, something was eerily familiar to me. So I wanted to plan a trip. So the next year I went out there on a vacation, and I planned a vacation to go with a friend of mine. And I wanted to make it fun, do something different. So this was before cell phones, before internet, before all of that stuff. So I dressed up as Wyatt Earp. He dressed up as Doc Holliday. And we wanted to experience the town dressed up that way just mm-hmm. for fun. Well, when we first walked into the town, somebody came up to me, up to both of us, and they thought that I was a reenactor because it turns out that they do reenactments of the shootout at the OK Corral. I didn't know that. I didn't know anything about Tombstone other than what I saw in the movie. And the movie was filmed on a built-up studio lot in Tucson. So it wasn't even the actual location. Mm-hmm. Long story short, this tourist came up to me and asked me where the courthouse was. And I didn't bat an eye. I said, sure. It's two blocks down. Take a left. You go one block. Take a right. And that's on the left-hand side. And my friend looked at me. He said, how the hell do you know that? He said, we've never been here. There's no maps of this town online. How do you know that? And I couldn't answer him at that time. Sure enough, we followed my directions, and there was the courthouse, exactly where I said it was.
Wow.
So that made me realize now that I had lived in Tombstone back between 1881 mm-hmm. and 1889. So I had past life experience.
Wow. So did that affect when you actually investigated it? Give you a better connection to the spirits that were there?
You know, I'm not sure if it did, but as a medium, and my abilities were hidden back in 1994 when I first visited. So mm-hmm. when I first went to the birdcage, I didn't pick up anything. Although I did photograph the face of what turned out to be the actor, the ghost of the actor that crosses the stage every night in the big portrait that hangs in the lobby
mm-hmm.
of Fatima, the actress. But what was it? 2019. I took a vacation out there and I met a friend of mine that had never been to the birdcage, and he didn't know how he felt about the paranormal. So I said, they have ghost tours now. And I noticed that online, and I said, would you like to go? And he said, yeah, that would be fun. He said, I don't really believe in ghosts, but I'll go. So we went, and he actually saw two ghosts and photographed one, and it's in the book, Birdcage, Ghost of the Birdcage Theater. And I ran into 11.
Wow.
And all of them, all of the ghosts that I ran into and mm-hmm. that I encountered were proven by the tour guide. When I told the tour guide who I was talking to or what happened to these people, they were able to confirm their identities.
That's incredible.
That's pretty crazy.
So the hauntings, you know, some people, you know, break them up into different categories: residual haunting, intelligent haunting, things like that. Mm-hmm. Do you follow that same model?
I do. I do. In the birdcage, though, there was one episode of a residual haunting that I encountered, and that was that at the end of the ghost tour, the last 20 minutes, they take you and seat you behind the stage. The original curtain, by the way, still hangs there from 1889. And they seat you back there. And I could hear the noises of men's voices who were gambling. I could hear gambling going on out front. I could hear men's voices. And I asked the tour guide, I said, is there anybody out on the other side? And she said, no. I said, oh, well, I hear people talking like they're gambling and drinking. And so that was a residual haunt. But everybody that I encountered there was actually an intelligent haunt. And they shared pain of death with me, which was pretty scary.
So they weren't happy. They were not still partying, drinking, gambling, shooting.
So when you go in the Birdcage Theater, it was built in it opened December 24th, I think 1881, and it closed in 1889 when the silver mines that created the wealth of the town had flooded, and all the silver miners were out of work. So the town basically shut down. But in those 8 years, it was – the Birdcage was the center of attention. It was a performance theater. It was a house of prostitution. It was a saloon. And it was a gambling hall. So there were four nighttime activities that actually went on 24 hours a day at the Birdcage Theater. And there were 26 people, I found out, 26 people murdered at the Birdcage Theater in the course of those 9 years. And there today, if you go in the Birdcage and go on tour, there's over 140 bullet holes that you can see scattered throughout the Birdcage Theater. Some of these ghosts that I encountered were killed because they were cheating at cards. And I encountered a lady of the evening right in the lobby who turned out to be famous for walking back and forth on this second floor balcony and has been seen outside from people on the street after the Birdcage is closed. So I saw her. When I went in the back, it used to be open back in the 1880s. You could walk in the lobby where the bar is, and then you could see the curtain to the stage. But later, they put a partition between the lobby and the theater. So you had to walk around through a door. Mm-hmm. That was when I had my first painful experience there. Have you been there, by the way?
No, I've never been there.
You haven't?
Mm-mm.
Oh, gosh, you need to go. And are you sensitive?
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay, well, you may find out the hard way because they may hit you over the head, actually, when you walk in there. The very first example I encountered, other than the woman that was walking on the balcony in the lobby, was this man. I was the last one in the tour group for the ghost tour. And as soon as I walked through that door into the back area, suddenly I felt what felt like a bullet go right through my throat. Mm. And I found myself being thrust against the wall. I felt like blood was coming out of my mouth, out of my neck rather. And I actually tasted the coppery taste of blood on my tongue. So this ghost, this man who was sharing his pain, was killed there. And he told me that he was gambling and he cheated. And he tried to get up and run. And they shot him in the throat. And he told me his name and so forth. And I was able to confirm everything with the docent there, the tour guide, who came over to me, incidentally. She saw me against the wall holding my throat. And she asked me what happened. And I couldn't talk for about 2 minutes. And finally, I rasped out that I'm a medium and they are sharing their pain of death. And I said, was there a man? Do you know of a man that was shot here in the throat? And she said, yes, we have a record of a man that was shot there in the throat dead. So that was pretty chilling. I do have to tell you that after that ghost tour, I went back in. I went back the next 2 years later. Mm-hmm. I went back and I published my book and I did a book signing there at the Birdcage. And I went back in, and sure enough, son of a gun shot me in the throat again. I told him when I was in there, I said, look, you don't know what this is. It's a cell phone, but I am going, it's a recording device. I said, I am going to walk around and record about what ghosts I met in what parts of the building. I said, so please, I would humbly ask you to not bother me. Well, Gary, he didn't like that because all of the recordings I made had this high pitch over them. Before I walked in the birdcage, I did an introductory video. It was fine. When I left the birdcage after that, I did a closing video, and it was fine, like 30 seconds, 60 seconds. But all in the birdcage theater, it was a high pitch. So this guy was not going to respect my wishes.
You got to make friends with the spirits.
I tried.
So what is your favorite haunted location?
My favorite haunted location? Well, it's hard to really choose. The birdcage certainly is up the top, but Hampton Court Palace in England, Henry VIII's palace. Mm-hmm. Heber Castle in England, where I encountered a ghost who wound up being someone that lived there, and he actually gave me a room-to-room tour of his castle, his boyhood castle. And I later proved every single thing that he told me when I got home. That was pretty cool. And all throughout Ireland, I met... excuse me. So there are three books in my On Vacation series, Ghosts mm-hmm. on Vacation series. So one is The Birdcage, one is Ireland, of course, and the other one is England. And those three places right there are just full of interesting dead people.
So we talked about people, we talked about animals. How about other type of spirit entities like fairies, angels, demons, things like that?
I haven't really encountered any non-human entities or non-animal entities. I think I've been very fortunate that way. I do have a theory though about non-human entities, and it comes from my science background because mm-hmm. I'm a scientist. So we've discovered the scientific community. I mean, 5,500 exoplanets. That's planets that orbit another star in another solar system in different galaxies. There's another 4,800 that have been identified and not fully cataloged yet. So we don't know if they have the chemicals for life. But that said, there are so many galaxies, and galaxies contain so many solar systems, so many stars and solar systems, so forth. I think would be remiss to think that we're the only life anywhere. I mean, we found water on different moons in our own solar system, and active volcanoes and so forth. So my theory is that some of these things that may be hostile may be life forms from other planets that come here, mm-hmm. and they don't know what we are. And like a wild animal, if they're faced with someone they don't know, you're a threat, and they may go on the offensive. So that's my theory.
Yeah, I have not ever come across anything negative yet either.
I mean, a lot of people with bad attitudes.
Yeah, yeah. That's just being human. So your scientific background and you have the paranormal background, do you have a particular model of reality that you follow? Like, do you believe in sort of like the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum physics?
Well, really, I don't try to follow anything specifically. I just like to – I'm more of a case-by-case basis guy. Mm-hmm. there are a lot of theories, and I have a lot of theories myself. So it's hard to know what to believe, really, until we get to the other side. That's the way I look at it.
I do tend myself kind of lean towards holographic reality theory. It does, for me, kind of, it holds up on a lot of different levels. Mm-hmm. That everything is information, essentially, being, you know, put around like waveforms, and then it becomes a particle when it's observed. And so we, when we're actually talking spirits, in some ways, what we're doing is pulling information out of the possibilities.
I can see that. Yep, absolutely.
But, you know, it's just fascinating how that works. So what else how do you merge the science and the paranormal?
So I've learned to explain a number of things in the paranormal with science. As I mentioned, we have the energies within us coupled with the memories, personality, and knowledge. And, mm-hmm. and then we choose where we're going to go. But I've also learned that because ghosts and spirits are earth, are energy rather, they need energy to get strong enough to communicate. So how do they do that? They get it from two different types of energy. They get it from physical energies, which are heat, light, water, and electricity. They can use those energies. They just like they can play with electric lights, just like they can turn on or off a television or a radio. So things like that are physical energies that they draw on to get strong enough to communicate. But there's also emotional energies, mm-hmm. and ghosts and spirits are different here. Spirits of our loved ones that have crossed over, pets or people, they draw on love, faith, and hope. Those are positive emotional energies. Earthbound ghosts tend to draw on negative emotional energies. That is mm-hmm. fear, anxiety, depression, and anger. Those things help fuel a ghost, which makes sense to me because if you go into a house that you think may be haunted, you're feeling anxious and you're giving that ghost that emotional energy to get strong enough to communicate with you. So scientifically, that makes sense to me. I've also noticed, too, that a lot of the most haunted towns happen to be near a river or the shore, the ocean, water, or lakes or streams.
Yeah, definitely water, I think, does have something to do with it. It must conduct spiritual energy.
Well, if you think about water being a conductor of electricity, I mean, that's why they tell you not to be in your pool in the summertime when there's a thunderstorm, because that lightning bolt will be carried through the water and it will kill you. Mm-hmm. That's why they tell you to get out of the pool. So there are other things in science too that I realize that I've been able to explain using science. So for instance, I'm sure you know all about cold spots and how cold spots have
the spirits will drain the heat from the air and it creates a cold spot.
Yeah. So that was something that I thought about a couple of years ago, and because they take the motion of an air molecule and they absorb it. They absorb that energy and it slows it down. And fast moving molecules of air are warm air, like in the tropics, and slower moving molecules of air are cold air, like in the Arctic. So that's why there's a cold spot wherever they form. So that's pretty interesting.
Do you think they can exist in more than one place at a time?
I think spirits can. Spirits who've crossed over seem to have that ability. But earthbound ghosts are stuck where they choose to stay.
Until there's no more time, I guess.
But I have found that if a ghost chooses to stay in a place, a structure that's torn down, they will go to one of the next nearest structures. When I was in Ireland, there's a fortress called the Rock of Cashel, and I had sensed that there were ghosts now in this vicar's chamber. But at one point, the Vicar's Chamber was in ruins. So where did they go? They went to the remaining tower. There was a tower there. And that's where they stayed until the Vicar's quarters were rebuilt. And then they came back to where they died.
Hmm. So they just keep coming back. Hey, have you ever gone to Gettysburg?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I have, and I won't go back.
Why not?
It's too much. It's like being in a stadium with 10,000 people, and they're all screaming at you, and they want your attention, and it's too emotionally draining.
Definitely haunted, though.
Yeah, so if you're sensitive, it takes a toll on you. And it's a very, very heavy, there's a lot of heavy residual energy there, of course, because it was such a horrible, bloody battle. That energy lingers all through the battlefield. And when we as living people go there, we're bringing our living emotion energy, and we're enabling that residual energy to power up again. So that's how why we can feel it. But yeah, it seems odd that you could go out in a field on a sunny day and you can feel weighted down, like depressed and just anxious and horrified. But that's exactly how it feels when I go there.
Hmm. So that one has like a dark feeling and a heavy feeling. Are there any certain locations that are like the complete opposite, that are like really light and freeing?
In Gettysburg or outside of Gettysburg?
Outside of Gettysburg. I mean, anywhere. Like, if Gettysburg's like a negative, like heavy place, have you been to like any other place that has like the opposite feeling to it?
I've been to places that do have good energy imprinted within, and it depends on what occasion happened within there. Even some of the castles in England, they weren't all bad. It wasn't all heavy residual energy there either. There were some really wonderful things that happened there. There were some big celebrations that happened there. So when I went into a certain room, I could feel the elation of the people at whatever time of this the celebration was held. And that positive emotional energy was in that room. And that was a number of different places. But one of the places I find is pretty neutral is our cemeteries, because nobody opts to haunt a cemetery, in my experience, if you will, except for one guy in Scotland. But he was a jerk. But we choose, if you choose to stay behind as an earthbound ghost, we often choose to stay in a place that we knew in life or where we died, like a prison or battlefield or a hospital or a home that you enjoyed living in, something like that. People could stay in a home as an earthbound ghost and stay there for eternity. And to me, that's hell, really, because you're in isolation. You can't communicate with anybody unless you're lucky enough that a medium walks in. And you're there for eternity. And you can't communicate with the people who crossed over in spirit either. So,
yeah, I don't know why anybody would want to choose that existence.
I don't know, but it makes sense to me when, as a paranormal investigator, that we go into these places and help me is mostly the most common thing that we hear. And they want help crossing over because they know they made a big mistake by staying behind.
Can we help them?
We can. Yep. So I've done quite a number of crossings, but it takes about four or five people to pool our emotional energies to open a doorway to the other side, if you will. It's very emotionally and physically and mentally draining to do that. And I've also recently come up with a theory about why ghosts can't cross over after a certain time being here.
What is it?
It has to do with energy. So, so when we die and we're energy, we have a certain amount of energy. We have the most energy that we're ever going to have. And then over time, like a battery, that energy wanes. It gets weaker and weaker over time. And that's why they have to keep drawing on other sources of energy to get strong enough to communicate with us. They don't have that high energy all the time. It just starts to fade. And because they don't have that high level of energy anymore, they can't open the doorway to the other side as they could have when they first died. Mm-hmm. So it's about energy.
Do you think that sometimes, like, I noticed, like, some paranormal investigators get more activity than others. And, you know, some people will say it's because they're sensitive, but other people will say that it's the actual paranormal investigator that's manifesting the paranormal activity.
I think it's really about the perception of the ghost with the investigators. Mm-hmm. Just like, I liken it to this. If you go into a crowded room of people, usually there's a couple of people that you will be drawn to say hello. Conversely, there are other people that you will kind of avoid. You won't say anything to them, even though you don't know them. And I think ghosts are the same way. Because they're people, they do the same thing. So they can look at somebody and say, oh, I feel comfortable going up to this person and telling them I'm here and asking them for help. Whereas there may be 10 other paranormal investigators, and the ghost will not feel the same for those people. And I think that's really what it's about.
How do you feel about, like, the investigators that, what's the word for it? Harass spirits.
Oh, gosh. I think that's a really dumb thing to do. I always tell people that if you have a ghost in your house, I want you to think of them as an invisible roommate. Would you try and tick off an invisible roommate in your house? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't. you know, and you know they're a being of energy, so they can use energy to manipulate things. I think treating ghosts with respect is treating anyone with respect, whether it's a ghost or a human, is the only way we should live. Hmm. We need to be kind to each other, and you get more. My mother used to say, "You get more bees with honey." Yeah.
I'm a big advocate of kindness myself. When you help them cross over and they successfully cross over, do you ever hear from them again? Or do you ever say, like, hey, you know what? I'm going to help you out this time, but you owe me one.
I don't hear from them again.
No?
Because they usually will go back to they'll go back to the people that they mm-hmm. loved in this life. I'm just kind of a vehicle to help them get to where they need to go. And I'm kind of like a paranormal Uber guy, you know. There was one particular case in my book, Case Files and Inspired Ghost Tracking, which is all about paranormal cases that the team that I belong to went on. There was one particular case where it turned out to be this young girl, this young woman. She was in an accident, and when I went into the when myself and another medium in the group, Troy Klein, went into the house and we met with the husband and the wife, I immediately sensed that there was a young woman next to her with. Who was showing me an earring and singed hair, and her earring was melted into her ear. And that told me that she was either in a fire or an accident with a car caught on fire or a house fire or something like that. And the other medium confirmed what I got. And then, we wound up getting messages that the reason this woman became earthbound as a ghost is because she died in this hospital, and she attached herself to the wife of this family. Well, the wife of the family turned out to be the head nurse at a burn unit in a hospital. We didn't know that. And she said, "Oh my God, I know who you're talking about." So while we were there, she called one of her fellow nurses, got the name of the patient that she was helping comfort. And she said, yes, this young girl was at a party. They rented a car and there was an explosion in the back of the car. And the car caught on fire and she had third degree burns all over her body. The nurse tended to her until she passed away. So once she passed away, the nurse was the only one that ever cared for this girl. She had obviously a hard life. So the girl stayed behind as an earthbound ghost, thinking that the nurse could help her more. But the nurse couldn't because the nurse didn't know that she was there. All she saw was the shadows, and she kept feeling cold and crazy things, which is why she called us in. So we were able to figure out who it was, and then we crossed her over. And when we crossed her over, every time we cross somebody over, there's a physical burst of warm air. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why. I haven't been able to figure that out, but it's true. That's exactly what we feel. But we've never heard from her again because now she's on the other side and she's with her older relatives in spirit. So I call that the case of the burned ghost. Yeah.
Do you think when people die that they all go to the same place? Or do you think that we get to choose what we want to do after we pass?
Well, we can make a choice of either being earthbound as a ghost or crossing over as a spirit. One thing I learned from my own aunt who passed away is that there are at least three levels on the other side. Mm-hmm. And her story is in my first book too, Ghosts and Spirits Explained, because she explained things to me. She kept coming to me, telling me that she needed my mother's forgiveness. My mom and my aunt had a love-hate relationship, as some sisters do. I mean, brothers do too, I suppose. But my aunt did some not so good things to my mother for her whole life. So my aunt wanted forgiveness after she died, and my mother had a hard time trying to forgive her. And I used to tell my mother, I said, you know, look, I know you're Italian. Italians invented the word vendetta, but you need to let it go. Well, Gary, it took 25 years, really, after my aunt first came to me to get that forgiveness from my mother. My aunt immediately gave me a confirmation that she had ascended to the second level of the other side. She put herself in the first level, because she felt badly about the way she mistreated my mother. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think in Japan there are maybe seven levels of the afterlife. I can't remember exactly, but there are different societies have different beliefs in the levels of the afterlife. Hmm.
Do you believe there's a hell, or do you just think that being stuck here is hell?
I believe being stuck here as an earthbound ghost is hell. And it's a hell of our own choice. If you think about being trapped in an isolation prison for your entire afterlife where nobody can hear you, mm-hmm. and nobody can help you.
Yeah, it sounds lonely.
It's horrendous. And that's why, you know, that's what solitary confinement is. And that's why people go insane, solitary confinement. I totally agree. That's what hell is that being trapped as an earthbound ghost.
Do you believe that there's spiritual beings that are in charge, like God and the devil?
I don't call them those labels. I think that there's negative energy and there's positive energy. Mm-hmm. because I'm a scientist. So I believe that when you cross over, it's all positive emotional energy. And, you know, it's a collective consciousness on the other side, really, because every living thing is part of that greater consciousness. And you can call it God if you want, or, you know, whatever. I don't explain things in terms of religions, because there are so many religions around the world, and I explain things in terms of science of energy, and mm-hmm. people can apply their religious beliefs to the science if they want, if that makes them understand it better.
Yeah, I mean, electricity kind of explains it pretty well, just polarity.
It does.
You know, it's just negative energy. I mean, just it's just a flow of energy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, but there are people that are not nice on the other side. Mm-hmm. And there was one paranormal investigation I went on in a place called Cocky's Tavern in Maryland. And I felt very uneasy in this particular place. And on the first floor, and there was one room where I sensed a man. And he made me feel very uncomfortable. And I finally said to the team, okay, I'm kind of done. I need to leave here. So I did. And when I got home, the manager of the group, Margaret Ehrlich, had called me and she said, Rob, I have to play a EVP for you, one that we got on a digital recorder when we were in that room that made you uncomfortable. And it was clearly a man's voice, Gary, and it said, kill Rob. So I said, that's probably why I felt very uncomfortable in that particular room.
Yeah, yeah, that would bother me, especially if my name was Rob like yours.
Yeah. So, yeah, I always tell people that if you're a nice person in life, you'll be a nice person in death. If you're a jerk, you're going to be a jerk in death.
Do you think those spirits eventually do leave this plane after a certain amount of suffering? Like they pay off their karma?
The ghosts?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it can't be for eternity, can it?
They have options. So if someone dies near them, in the vicinity of them, and they see the light, because they can sense the light, just like they can sense who is a medium and who isn't a medium, they can go to it, and they can use that to cross over. So there are options. I always tell people that if your house is haunted, direct people to the nearest hospital or even cemeteries. Sometimes people wait to cross over finally when they get to the cemetery, when their body gets to the cemetery. My own dad did that. He waited because he wanted to see everything. He wanted to see who came. But there are opportunities for people who are earthbound to cross over on their own.
What do you think about like when people first pass? Sometimes they say the spirit will go around and say goodbye to different loved ones and then ascend to heaven.
Yeah, I absolutely believe that. Yep. I've talked to quite a number of people who have had that experience. People that live thousands of miles away from where their loved one was. Just last week, a woman had written me and she said, my grandmother, I knew my grandmother was dead because I felt it. And I live like 1,800 miles away. And she said, I told my husband. And then the next morning they got a call that her grandmother had passed away the night before. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely believe that.
Yeah, I had one of those experiences when I was a kid.
You did?
Yeah, yeah. And I shared. I had it happen with my mom, too. It was just I had woken up like around like 3 in the morning. I was probably like, I think like 7 or 8 years old to go to the bathroom. And my mom was up and sitting at the kitchen table. I was like, what are you doing here? She's like, I couldn't sleep. I was like, yeah, I can't sleep either. And then we were hanging out in like around 6:30, whatever like you know, normal daytime was, the phone rang and my great-grandmother had passed away. So it was just like this feeling like we both were just like new.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, and it's because the spirit comes to us and influences us to feel that way, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know what neither of us knew what the message was. You know, I think like a medium, like your job is sort of like you're able to interpret some of those messages.
Yep. But one thing that I find that when people and pets pass, the first thing they want to do is they want to notify us that they passed and that they're okay in spirit on the other side. And mm-hmm. They're no longer feeling pain. That's the most important thing, I think, to us who are left behind. We want to know that they're not experiencing the pain anymore. And they're not, because they're really just energy.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, yeah. Like when you're with somebody who's passing, you feel the change in energy in the room when they pass.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you ever had that experience? Like being with someone and they go like that, you feel it?
I've never been in the room when they passed except for my pets. And yeah, I could feel the change in energy, but I have to be honest with you, I wasn't thinking about it at the time.
Yeah, as a pet, it's different because they're emotional.
Yeah, I was an emotional train wreck with all of them. I will say that one important thing, speaking of passings, is that pets, like people, will choose to pass if they're surrounded by people they love or if they're not. And this is really, this is important for pet parents too, because they will ask why they don't wait for them to come home from work before passing away. And the reason is, just like people, they don't want us to see them pass away, because mm-hmm. that they know that image will forever be in our minds and we'll never be able to wash it out of our minds. And it's too traumatic. They know it's too traumatic for us because they can read our emotions. So instead they want to pass when we're not there. And that way we'll remember them when they're alive and healthy, people and pets too.
Yeah. Yes. I had a cat once and I had left it with my parents. Moved in with my parents with this cat. And he loved the cat, so I left the cat when I moved out. But when this cat died, like what it did was, like it was like 20 years old, but it came home, went outside, had a normal day, came home, just laid down in his regular spot on his towel or whatever it was, curled up, and just died. Right in the regular, you know, like where it was most comfortable.
Yeah. So we can make that choice. I often tell the story of my mother, who she had a stroke back in 2013, and she was never going to recover. She at all. The doctor said she was pretty much brain dead for all intents and purposes, and she would not recover. So I was living 450 miles away at the time. I got the call. My brothers called me like the next day. And said that she's been in the hospital. She's she had a stroke. She's never going to recover. We've been sitting here all night. We're going to sit here all 24 hours. And the doctor said, "You guys come up. We know you have three dogs. It's going to be a couple of days. Take your time." So we got up there in a day and a half. And when I walked into the hospital room. Immediately, my dad, who had passed 5 years before, I felt him come next to me, and he was holding my mother's favorite dog, a poodle named Gigi. And my mother used to kid all the time. She used to say to all of the people around her that her favorite child was Gigi, her poodle. Even though she has three sons, and she would make sure she said it when all three of us were there. So, so my brothers said that they were sitting there, on 24 hours a day, and my dad told me, he said, "Your mother wants to be alone." He said, "So please convince your brothers that you all need to leave tonight, because I'm going to help your mom cross over. And she said, I brought the vehicle in which to convince your mother to cross over, Gigi. So he said, my dad said, tell your mother that I'm here with Gigi. And that's what I did. And then my dad said, say goodbye and please all go home. So I managed to convince my brothers because they know I had proven to them that my dad was at his own wake and his own funeral mm-hmm. 5 years before by a handkerchief. It's a long story. So they did. They left. And my mother passed away about 4 or 5 hours later by herself because that's the way she wanted to go.
My father, he didn't want to die.
He didn't?
I never seen a man hanging on to life so hard.
Why do you think he did that?
Oh man, he was afraid. He was terrified of it. Poor guy. He just thought, like, I think he didn't believe in the afterlife. I think he was terrified of being sucked into a void of emptiness.
Well, you know, whether or not you don't have to have religious beliefs to believe in the afterlife. All you have to do is believe in the science of energy, because bottom line is in science that the law of conservation of energy says energy can't be destroyed. Yeah. It has to be transformed.
Yeah, he wasn't smart enough to understand that.
Yeah. So we're energy. And so we're not going to be, our shell may be destroyed, but the essence within will live on in some way.
Yeah. I have no doubt that there's, I don't know if it's what we think it is, the linear sense, but I certainly believe that there's absolutely nothing to worry about.
Yeah, there's nothing to worry about.
Don't have to worry about it. So I want to thank you for coming on, but before we wrap it up, where's the best place for listeners to find you and find your books?
Thank you. So they can find – I have a website. It's robgutrow.com. If you can't remember how to spell my last name, you can type in petspirits.com. It takes you to the same place. And all of my books are on Amazon. They're all in paperback, ebook, or audiobook now. And I do pet readings on weekends for a small fee, but I'm booked out about 15, 16 months in advance. So it's quite a wait. I know, I also want to let people know that I understand the loss of a pet. I've lost 4 dogs and I know the grief and the emptiness and the heartbreak. So that's why I wrote the 4 books in my Pets in the Afterlife series to teach you what signs to look for so that you can read some of them or one of them and get an understanding about how it works and what to look for so that you don't need a medium reading to see signs from your pets. You just have to be a pet parent and know your pets and you'll be able to recognize their signs.
That's pretty cool. That's awesome. So I'll put a link to your website in the notes of this episode. It's been a pleasure having you on. Hope you come back again. And, I currently don't really have an outro anymore, but if anybody wants to contact me, you can reach me at everythingimaginable2020@gmail.com. And I'd like to thank everybody for listening and have a great whatever time of the day it is when you're listening to this recording.
Recording stopped.